The Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains. I'm Corby Skinner.
And I'm Anna Page. And we're sharing stories of creative people who live and work in the Intermountain West.
Anna, I was thinking the other day, one of the roles that our show should have is making sure the important people in our community that have formed art and culture for us get recorded. And I can't think of anybody more important to what's happened in Billings in terms of art than our guest, Donna Forbes.
I agree, Donna. It's so lovely to have you in the studio, joined with your dear friend Gordon McConnell, who's been a longtime supporter of the arts as well in our community. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think everyone knows who Donna Forbes is in terms of her long tenure at the Art Center and then the Art Museum. But Donna, I wondered, what brought you into the world of art?
My father was a doctor in Billings. He was a physician surgeon. But he was very interested in carving and making plaster casts of things. And it was the way he relaxed. So that kind of got me started. We always had books and magazines about art in our home. And even during the Depression, my folks would see that we had things like that. My parents valued the arts highly, even though they weren't educated in the arts.
And did you grow up in Billings?
I did, yes. We moved here when I was 8, so I've spent most of my life in Billings and probably could tell. No, I can't tell stories anymore because they're all gone. I can't even remember them. But yes, I have a long, long life here.
And your father and your mother really made education important to all of your siblings. And you were fortunate to spend some time studying art out in New York during a really critical period for contemporary art. And I think that informed a lot of what you brought back to Montana.
I think that's right. When I was there, the abstract expressionist movement was very strong. Some wonderful things were going on, and it was just an exciting time. I was at Pratt Institute. Pratt is an art school. Actually, it's based in Brooklyn, but it's considered New York. The excitement was just, you could feel it, the excitement in the air. And of course, all of the professors and so on at Pratt were thrilled with what was happening in the world of art in the United States. And so that was infectious to all of us. And we were always encouraged, the minute we had a free moment, get to the galleries, get to the museums, see what's happening, learn what you can, see what you can, and so on.
And it must have just felt like a fire hose almost to leave Montana and to be exposed to such great works of art in the finest museums in the country and perhaps the world.
That's very true. It was a heady experience for me. It was quite wonderful.
One of the things that I've noticed in traveling to various cities and looking at grand museums, whether it's Philadelphia or Chicago, Detroit, that a lot of the work in the art museums that was collected was European art. And I just was just hearing you talk about how vibrant a time it was for American art.
I was very fortunate. I went to MSUB, now it's called Eastern Montana College, then. I'd gone 2 years to Bozeman to the art school there and then came back not knowing what I wanted to do, and so I enrolled for a year at MSUB here. And fortunately, Isabel Johnson was on the faculty then, and of course, she's been gone a long time, but she was from a Montana ranching family, and she had gone to school in New York and in Europe because the arts were what she really was interested in doing. And she was a very intelligent woman, and so when I came back from Pratt, I met her, and we became very good friends. And I went to school at Eastern. It was, I can't remember what they called it then, but because of Isabel. And she was a wonderful influence on my life. So to have somebody in Billings who knew what was going on nationally and internationally in the visual arts was quite heady. It was quite, really a wonderful experience, and I had seen a lot of that she talked about to me about because I had been back at Pratt.
Isabel was a key figure in among a very small group of what we've begun to call the rural avant-garde. Mm. She was close friends with Bob and Jenny DeWeese in Bozeman, Jesse Wilbur, Francis Senska, and particularly Bill Stockton, the great abstract painter who was also a sheep rancher from Grass Range.
I imagine in Montana it was difficult to be just an artist because Isabel had her ranch and painted the whole time, right?
That's right. And Bill thought Isabel was quite remarkable. And because they were both ranchers, there was a meeting of the mind there in that rural life and so on. But he was very impressed with her intelligence and her grasp of what was happening in the world of art.
It sounds like that did come back into Montana, too, and it was a very uniquely informed contemporary art scene that was part of maybe the romanticized West, but also a very true version of looking out a window. I know when I was speaking with Ted Waddell, this idea of seeing the landscape and then also seeing these contemporary influences coming to real life based on what he was seeing on the prairies.
It was very important because at that time in Montana, having lived here a long time, Charlie Russell was the only artist that most people recognized. They recognized his name and his work and so on. Anybody else really didn't much exist for them. And, of course, Isabel coming back and with her wonderful background, and then I had been to New York and so on. We knew that these great changes were taking place in this country, in the visual arts.
Now, the Yellowstone Art Center started when the city converted our old jail into an art center. And when did you start, based on when the museum first opened?
Oh, I was involved from the very beginning, really. And it was a group of people more than the county commissioners. We could convince them of how important it was to have an art museum in Billings. They got it when we passionately went after them. But there were just it wasn't a large group of people who made the Yellowstone Art Center happen. It wasn't a large group. But with people like Isabel backing us and so on, because she had a lot of patrons of her own work and people who realized that she was a pretty bright gal. Her passion was important in the background of all of us who worked to get the old jail into the art center.
And it seems like it was incredibly important to create an art center that would be of a statewide standard and a national standard, too, that could bring in contemporary art to be accredited, to really set the tone for Montana a place for contemporary art. And I feel like Isabel, yourself, were very big influences in that movement.
Well, it was interesting. I was on a national board that met in New York and with all these rather well-known arts people, and they called me the warrior out here, which I thought was kind of interesting. But the people back there were interested in Montana. I found that fascinating because, back here behind the sagebrush curtain, as Bill Stockton always used to say, you feel that you're so isolated from what's going on in the country, in the arts, that when you have people recognize what you're doing as important and they have big jobs in the arts in the country.
I was growing up in Billings at the time, and I remember that there were some people that wanted the art center to be Western art in a more traditional format, and the contemporary, they weren't all so excited about. Tell us about that sort of decision to make the art museum contemporary.
Well, you're scratching my memory a long time ago. A lot of things have happened at that time and then since then. There were just enough people, number one, who recognized Isabel and how intelligent she was and what she was doing up at the college and so on. And then there were others who traveled enough that they realized that it was important we have a museum that was showing the art of today, not just the Western historical, what we call the Charlie Russell work and so on. Mm-hmm. They found that what was happening nationally and internationally was so exciting in the visual arts that they understood we needed to address that. And so that was a wonderful time for the people who stepped forward. And, well, Corby, you were part of that, you know, who just said, yes, this is right. This is what we should be doing. And you traveled enough and saw enough that you could speak with authority, and that was important.
Yeah. As the Art Center grew, it became clear, just almost in a sense of conservation of resources, that we had well-developed Western art collections in Great Falls and Helena and Cody. That aesthetic was amply represented at a very high level, and that our particular opportunity was to focus on this exciting group of avant-garde modernist artists who were bringing, who were responding not only to international ideas, but the power of this place and the particular wonderful sense of community we have among our less than a million people, but we are in one, we feel like we're in one community in this state in a lot of ways.
Now, you two have quite a kinship, too, but you had met professionally. Gordon, you were brought on as a curator, I believe, in the...
82.
All right.
Yes.
And Donna, you met Gordon and wanted to bring him to Montana, and you were working at that point in Texas, but
yes.
Was from Colorado. Tell me what brought you two together.
Who did we meet,
Well,
Gordon?
Chris Warner. Chris Warner, a great Montana artist born in Great Falls, was a grad student at the University of Colorado when I was there as an art history major. And I became the art critic for the Daily Coloradoan campus newspaper. And one of my missions was to write reviews of all the MFA grad students' thesis shows. Chris was one of the most charming members of the student body. And I loved his stories about Montana the literature that he talked about and the friends that he had and the people in ranching. I have a background in the ranching and farming world, too. And I felt like Colorado was too crowded for my sensibilities, and Montana kind of became this glowing Shangri-La over the horizon that I kind of aspired to come to. So Chris was working on the Art Center staff, and he kind of recruited me.
Yeah, he did.
And introduced
he
us
did.
At a museum conference. Yeah.
Let's jump ahead a little bit, because I think of the art museum as having several purposes. One, being able to show contemporary work, but I know how important it is for regional artists that are doing work to be embraced and have their work shown. Who really was behind supporting regional artists and showing work, maybe for the first time, by people like Deborah Butterfield or Ted Waddell or Bill Stockton?
Certainly when I met Gordon and he convinced himself and I convinced him he should come here, it expanded my horizons a lot, because his had been expanded. And meeting a lot of these people and bringing them in, it just, everything seemed to come together at the right time.
Well, it's John Buck and Deborah Butterfield's reputations were ascending. They were educated in other parts of the country and came to Montana State University in Bozeman, and Deborah became a very prominent artist on the cutting edge of her time. So I was aware of them, and Rudy Audio to a lesser extent, Peter Volkas, Harry Jackson, the Western artist from Cody, who actually was one of the pioneering abstract expressionists in his early career. And Chris told me about these crazy people like Ted Waddell and Dennis Voss and Patrick Zients, who were ranchers, had a direct connection to the land, and were well-schooled in the latest art ideas, and that equation between this place and those minds and their inventive, ambitious embrace of art as the whole purpose of their lives was so exciting. And Donna had really set the agenda for the art museum to be a modern institution. And so she had fought a lot of these fights before I got here. And I was just caught up in the excitement of this community, which was, it was into the second generation of modernism in Montana. Ted Waddell, I guess, would consider a second generation. Now we're four generations, probably, of this aesthetic, of these ideas.
And how important to see them on the walls, to see them represented in a large contemporary art museum. And Donna, you used a description, or I guess you were described as being a warrior. And I'm curious where that drive came from for you. What was that drive to really fight and stand up for the ideals that you had of this contemporary art museum?
I think it must be my basic nature, I have to say, that being a fighter, but fighter for a cause that you just passionately believe in. It was such a dynamic time in the arts, and it was infectious. And if you are involved, deeply involved in an institution whose purpose is going to be the visual arts, and you know that's what's happening on the national level, the international level, is what's affecting the arts from now on. It just, you just don't stop. You just keep moving forward. And when you have people like Gordon backing you all the time and probably pushing me, and several others, John and Debbie were wonderful, just the different artists and arts people, we had a really special magic time there.
We have to talk about the patrons and volunteers, the trustees, the docents, the philanthropists who supported Donna's efforts, whom she courted and befriended. And as a longtime resident of Billings, she knew many of the prominent people in the community, and she was not shy about talking to them about supporting the growth of the Art Center and the development of the collection.
Yeah, it seems like too, Donna, you had you told me in previous conversations, Billings had the right resources. You knew that this was going to be a center for the state. We had the financial resources through the banking industry, through the hospital industry. We had the energy resources. There were plenty of people willing to show up and financially support the museum and its growth. I mean, you went from a small center to a rehab jail facility to an incredibly expanded museum.
And a nationally recognized, because I know how difficult it is to get that recognition as, is it IMS, International?
It's IMLS now, IMLS. Institute of Museum and Library Services.
Right. And most museums don't have that. That's a very difficult thing to obtain. I want to ask a little bit about what Miriam Sample did to sort of help the art scene, because I do remember that there was concern that a lot of the work that was being created by Montanans was leaving the state, and there wasn't work by regional artists in collections around the state. Can you talk a little bit about that project?
I have to say that Miriam was a great blessing to just landed in our laps. I know she was ready to have a major project in her life that she could just passionately jump into. She loved the visual arts, and we just connected. She connected with the museum, and we connected with her, and it was a wonderful time then. She would understand that we'd bring in an artist or an artist's work to look at, it, and she could see it. Miriam came from Chicago. Well, before that, where was she from? The South somewhere. She'd had a good education, a fine education, and she had been exposed to the big museums. She really knew what a museum was about. And she became passionate in helping us build a collection, because museums, really, that's what they are. They are a collecting institution, and that's what builds your name as a museum. You're a collector. And she wanted to see that the Yellowstone had a good collection, and she knew how important that was. So, you know, it was just, I think back on that time now, and I think so many things fell into place. They were just ready to, I guess.
There was a public-private equation in this, too. We had proposed a roster of 20 artists that, to the Montana legislature through the Cultural and Aesthetics Grant Program to begin a nucleus of the Montana collection. And we named the names in our newsletter. Miriam read the newsletter, and she contacted Donna right away about that. And her great mission, which superseded not just building a collection for the museum, was to help the artists. And she fell in love with Bill Stockton especially, who had a broken down old bed and had been retired from ranching for a long time. And she just loved him and took him under her wing and agreed to buy a collection of his work for a set amount, a stipend over a course of 10 years. So that is one of the warm spots in the story. And then there were the Montana, Corby was involved with a series of public service announcements. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should talk about that.
Well, again, Miriam supported the idea that there were some very important artists in Montana, mm-hmm. but very few people knew about them.
Right.
And so we did a series of interviews with Rudy Audio, Isabel Johnson, Russ Chatham. I mean, wonderful interview. So we got a feel for what not only their work was like, but what they were like. And that's sort of an exciting thing that sort of builds on, and I don't want to say Montana art, but it's certainly a regional focus in terms of people that are tied to the influence of landscape. Mm-hmm. Would you say?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It overlaps with the literary world that you're mm-hmm. you're more conscious of than mm-hmm. than I am in particular. I mean, the McGuanes and the Doigs and James Welch and other great writers who have transformed our understanding of this place, and these visual artists have done the same thing.
Yeah, I'm very much tied to place and land, as we talk about. And I think, too, Donna, that you have referred to some Bill Stockton painting that you have, that you could look at it every day and see something new. And I love that idea. And I was curious what captivated you about Bill Stockton.
Oh, what a complex man he was. But with Bill, you knew, look, if you just visited with him for a while, that he knew how to, what Isabel always called, you have to know how to look and see, not just look. And Bill did. His feel for the land, for the prairie, I love the prairie because I'm a prairie person too. It was just magnetic to me. And so his work just exemplified what we felt was an artist's work who was really important to this part of the country.
And that idea to learn to look and see that you mentioned from Isabel, it seems so simple when you reference it. But yes, exactly that it seems like simple advice, but to truly learn to look and see. Yeah. And these artists that we're referring to, seems like that was, in essence, their distilled talent was to take that and be able to present that back.
Yeah, and that's true of every really great artist, wouldn't you say that, Gordon, that they have learned to look and see?
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what it's all about.
And they transform our vision.
Absolutely.
The good news is that the Yellowstone Art Museum will be having a major show of Bill Stockton's work this summer into the fall. And for people that haven't seen Bill Stockton, his work is so refreshing, regardless of when it was painted. It really has energy and excitement to it.
I have to say, right now, I've broke my arm, and I've been staying in a nursing home. And so my sons came in and moved furniture in. That's what you do. and they picked some paintings to put in. And one they picked, which is over my couch in this room, is a beautiful Bill Stockton. And I look at it every day. Every day and every day, I sit right below it and look at it.
You also have Gordon McConnell on the wall.
I do.
And Gordon, I've heard your work described as being able to be both this contemporary, but also to kind of fit into the Western mythology. And so you've got these two worlds of people who some really get the irony and the complex visual representations of old Westerns taken from stills, and it's just this very contemporary take on Western mythology. And then you've got, you know, the Western mythology that it falls into too. So you've really captured a very unique slice of the West.
It's
that's right.
Interesting uh-huh. challenge, but uh-huh. I found a great term today referring to the great West Coast artist William T. Wiley, Hilton Kramer, who was an art critic at the New York Times, one and a great advocate of abstract art, the pure color field, Greenberg, flat canvas, gestural brushwork, no content. He referred to William T. Wiley's work, which is just suffused with content, just busy, busy, busy with writing and imagery. And he called it Dude Ranch Dada.
Nice.
Perhaps I'm on that spectrum.
That's a pretty good spectrum to be in. Well, and looking forward in our community, especially given the amount of time that we've all spent here, I mean, what do you hope to see in the next years as the Art Museum continues to grow? We have, obviously, a lot of new staff. There's a new curator on board. We've got a new executive director. Donna, what do you hope for or see for the future of the YAM as it continues to evolve?
Well, I hope that they will very carefully keep assembling the permanent collection. That is a great responsibility. And when I say carefully, that's what you have to do, because there's quite a few pieces in that collection right now, the Montana collection. So I hope that they will continue growing that collection, but very carefully, so that it becomes the real essence of Montana, of this place that we have.
Donna, the essence of Montana, I would see that as your moniker, because you have been so responsible for making art a part of our lives. So I thank you and Gordon for being here and sharing a little history about the Yellowstone Art Museum.
Thank you.
Thank you. This has been fun.
Glad to have you both here.
Resounds, Arts and Culture on the High Plains is produced by Corby Skinner, Anna Page, and Ken Siebert for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music by Alex Naumann. Additional funding provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montanans. More information on Resounds is available at ypradio.org.